Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about accountability. And you know, we kind of talk about it all the time, but not real specifically. So this time let's think about it as a specific question. And as we often do, we're going to start out with a general one, and then we're going to see where our discussion takes us, because, of course, this is an unscripted show. It has to do with what people like to talk about, what we would like to know. Mm-hmm. So what are we as leaders? Let's do leaders first, because that's us, and then we'll do participants. What are we as leaders accountable for within our context? Within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, a consensus building, even a workshop and a seminar, because when we're leading it, we are accountable to our participants, aren't we? We're accountable to our students when we are teaching that they understand the topic and that they've learned something. Yeah, I always feel that way. I always feel that I need to impart knowledge, and that makes me accountable to them, doesn't it? So what are we accountable for as leaders? Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. I'm going to say the first one, the most popular answer to the question of accountability, is basically that we're accountable for helping create a workable group dynamic. Yeah, a group dynamic that's really useful and that we can go forward with. And then, of course, a lot of you, thank you very much, a lot of you have returned. Thank you all of you for listening. A lot of people are talking about the civility rules, because as leader, we are accountable for enforcing the civility rules. Yes. And for those of you who are new, we will talk about the civility rules in our conversation today, and you will learn about them. And then I will feel that I've taught you something. Fabulous. Wonderful. You know what? I'm going to say the next one's going to be leading towards a successful outcome. Yeah, because a lot of you are talking about helping people fulfill what they want and also to understand what success looks like, which is really half the battle. Because sometimes people have a very generic idea of success. I want to win. Well, yeah, don't we all? But the answer is exactly what and exactly how are we going to do that? Yeah. So leading towards a successful outcome. Yeah, I'm gonna make the next one talking about the process, because it's a very practical thing to know, how to make the process smooth and transparent, yeah, and so that we can indeed lead to the successful outcome. These are all kind of interrelated in a way, but oftentimes our discussions are interrelated, aren't they? Because they are, well, they're leading to our successful outcome, to our knowledge, yes. And I'm going to, one of the main ones that we have here now is we're accountable for the outcome to whoever it is that brought us in sometimes. Maybe a client, maybe a corporate person, whoever brought us in and said, well, Sue can handle this because she's handled worse than that, and get us out of the mess we're in and lead us towards success. We're kind of accountable to them, aren't we? Yeah, we're accountable to the person who we report to. Oftentimes, professionally, I have somebody that I report to, somebody who is on the, well, the corporate governance committee or something like that, who brought me in as a third-party impartial because whatever it was wasn't working, right? And I came in and I went, you know, I can handle this. But now I'm accountable to them to report how it's going, to report if we're making any progress, to report on what I need, too. Yes. So that will be five leadership topics, and then we're going to go for participants because they have to be accountable, too. Yes, we can hold them to a standard of accountability. So let's take these one by one in a pragmatic manner because we are pragmatic people. We like theory as much as the next person. I like theory as much as the next person. But we want to know what to do about stuff and not just that bad things exist. Right, right. So the first one is helping to create a workable group dynamic. How are we going to do that? We have to have a workable group dynamic. We have to work as a team. We might divide up into smaller teams. But we need to be able to really deal with each other. It's very, very important to have a good workable group dynamic. If you don't, you're going to have some difficulty because you're not all pulling together. And sometimes, as Elizabeth and many others are saying, she says common goals and desired outcomes with different reasons. You know, negotiate with the smaller group first. You know, it's a good point. A lot of times when you've got a group that you haven't chosen particularly, they have the same goal. They're pretty much fixed on the same goal, but they're there for different reasons, which makes kind of an odd group dynamic because they don't have much in common. The goal is what they have in common, but sometimes they're even at odds with each other, especially economically, right? And it is, they're not feeling very work together-ish, even though they know in their hearts they need to work together to make the desired outcome. As Elizabeth said, different reasons but common goals and desires. Well, that's when you have to, as the leader, you have to explain to everyone that we're in this together, that we need to participate together, because otherwise we are all not going to have the successful outcome. Right? Right. This is oftentimes a revelation to them. And that's why they need a leader who is fairly strong and understands the group dynamic and understands that they need to be kept on track. Because that's the kind of group that has arguments amongst themselves. And then somebody turns kind of huffy. You know what I mean? They kind of, oh, I'm not going to deal with you. Well, yeah, you are within this particular context because I say so. I'm the leader. I see that a lot of times in organizations that seem like they should get along, but they've got kind of little power plays going. Yeah. Sometimes you see it in charity fields, especially. Yeah. And they all keep replicating the same thing and wasting time and funds and effort and like that. Yeah, I work with Rotary quite a bit. Some of you have been here before. Well, a lot of you have been here before. You might have heard that that's true. And you see that with various charitable organizations sometimes. They have very good ideas, and they're trying to do good in the world. That is undisputed. And they want to get some sort of supplies or some sort of, oh, a vaccine, for example. We had that with polio with Rotary, right? All kinds of different groups, all kinds of different people. And they all agreed that polio is a bad thing. I mean, nobody thinks that having polio is good, right? Right. And we came over and told them that we have a drop that you put in a baby's mouth that will keep them from becoming a lifelong cripple. That's a good thing, right? Right. But to get it from that theory to the actual people who need it put in their mouth, there was a lot of politics involved. A lot of people worried that maybe if they let mostly Americans in, they would see something and then make a fuss in some way. A lot of people that were suspicious, they thought maybe it was poisoned or something. Yeah, because they had been taught a preconceived notion about the other, and the other was coming with a mystery thing, yeah, that you couldn't actually see working. Well, I understood that. That's a concept. That's an idea. That's a bias about other people. And a lot of people asked a very good question, which when we started we didn't really think about because we're Rotarians and our motto is service above self. We go and do things for people that can't possibly do anything for us back. What a concept. A lot of people we were trying to do things for, their leaders, wanted to know why. What's the catch? Why are you coming and doing this and sitting in the hot sun in fairly non-hygienic conditions and doing something that obviously costs money and time and effort and like that? Yeah, and that's kind of a good question because they did not come from a culture where people just did stuff for other people who could not do them any good and weren't related to them in any way. Wow. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we taught a lesson, too, about it's good to help other cause they need your help, and you can. What a concept. Yay, team. But these were all group dynamics that had to be worked out, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And we were all accountable for getting the product to the people, the vaccine, the drops. Mm-hmm. And so we had to work it out. And we worked it out on the ground, too, right? Yeah, when we got there, sometimes it wasn't set up. And we had to get the word out. And we had to work with all kinds of local leaders who were afraid that somehow their power was going to be undermined. And they didn't want it if that might be a chance of it. See, all accountability. Because they were accountable to their own group, too. Mm-hmm. And their group wanted to know why and if it was a good thing, if they wanted it. Yes, yeah, so you had to tell them how come and answer all, yes, answer the 5W questions. This is true. Who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Yes. What else do we need for a workable group dynamic besides the fact that we need to hold everyone accountable and we need to tell them that even though they have different reasons, the same goal is a mighty fine thing and we're going to reach it and we're going to work together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else do we need to do? George and others are saying you need to pay attention to physical needs. Yes, a lot of you are doing physical needs because that's part of a workable group dynamic. If people are uncomfortable physically, their attention span is going to be lower and they're not going to want to come because it's a drag. That's why we try to have a location and time that's amenable to most people. I like to have, if we're going to meet quite a bit, and we don't always, but especially physically, I like to have a certain day and time of the month or the week or however often we need to meet so that we know to set it aside, right? Yeah. So it's set aside on the calendar. And we know that Tuesday at 5 o'clock is the time when we go and talk about this and get it done. Mm-hmm. And since we don't want to spend every Tuesday for the rest of our lives, we get it done pretty fast, too, yeah. So pay attention to physical needs. If people are uncomfortable, they will be impatient and not want to. A lot of people talking about a comfortable meeting space. Yeah, clean, easily accessible, temperate in climate, not too hot, not too cold, doesn't smell funny, right? I actually, if I have my druthers, and we all know this, I actually like to have a meeting space that has some kitchen ability because we're going to have a potluck. And I think it's a fabulous thing to get people together to make something with everyone. I used to call this cooking, having everybody cook, but it's really not true. People told me that what I was doing is I was showing people how to cook, which is true. Because you can't really issue people knives and things because not everybody has any skills. And that's embarrassing to them. And they don't want to be left out, but they don't want to do it either. So what you do is you come with everything prepped, everything chopped or whatever, if you're making a stir fry, for example, and then you make it there, and then everybody gets to eat it right away, and it's yummy. Yeah, you come with the big rice cooker and the whole bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is... I like that because I think that it adds to the convivial atmosphere. It adds to what I'm accountable for is the physical comfort of my group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No distractions. Good point. Yes. If you've got a real construction zone or something next door that's singing real loud or yelling in some way, it is a distraction. It doesn't seem like it will be, but it will be. I like a place that's fairly quiet. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are talking about enough chairs and equipment, right? Yeah. You know, I'm going to tell you one of my little pet peeves. You know how people have equipment and they have the space and they have the PowerPoint or whatever it is. I don't usually use the PowerPoint because it makes you be very boring. But they have equipment that they want to use either in their presentation or they're letting the participants use, for example, computers, right? A phone bank, which is still something that folks use, right, for donations. Mm-hmm. My pet peeve, and this is, you've all seen this, is that when I get someplace as a participant, because as a leader, I watch, I do it, people haven't practiced with it. They're first going, oh, I don't know how this works. Can we find somebody? Does anybody know how to turn on a computer? Can we find somebody? No. Get there an hour early, set it up, and make sure the darn thing works. I always do. I check my own sound. If I'm doing a big presentation like a workshop or seminar, a speech or something, I come early and I check the sound so that my voice projects properly. I check the audio-video equipment if it's being recorded, right? Yeah. I say hello to people, to the sound people and the taking of the video people and like that. We do a short dry run just to make sure that everything is the right level and I don't have to go, oh, we have to go find somebody to find this. When I've got my people, my participants, my audience, remember to get there a little early and really check it through so that when you do it, it's spiffy professional, really, really spot on, and nobody has to roll their eyes or worse yet, get up on stage and try to fix it for you. Honest to goodness, I was at a presentation just the other day for a charity. I was a guest. It was one of those charity fundraiser things with dinner tables and stuff. And no, it wasn't political. We don't do political on this show. And it was for a hospital for uncompensated care. And the main speaker had what he thought was a PowerPoint thing. And when he turned it on, because he hadn't looked at all, and he brought his own computer, he had to fiddle for about 5 minutes through kind of personal pictures and crap because he wasn't on the right spot at all. Because he hadn't looked. He hadn't given it a dry run, Right? Right. I go, even though I'm sure of my stuff, I go and I make sure that it's properly plugged in, properly put in. Yes, now you've heard my soapbox, but it's very important to practice with your own equipment. And every time you go someplace and it has to be plugged in, it has to be put together, practice again, because sometimes stuff just doesn't want to, is my experience. And I only do fairly big meeting rooms with allegedly good equipment and Wi-Fi. Maybe not. Okay. What else should we do to make a workable group dynamic that we are accountable? Mm-hmm. Because we are accountable to making the group work as leader. Mm-hmm. Hussein says to create teams with complementary strengths. Mm-hmm. Other people like Lila are talking about think tanks that report to the entire group on a regular basis, which is the concept of team also. They're both pretty much the same thing. The idea is to put the group into smaller, more manageable numbers, especially if it's very big, and to create teams that are accountable to you, the leader, and to the group as a whole, for reporting in what they found, what they've done, what kind of progress has been made, or what kind of progress hasn't been made, and we need to maybe think about it, right? Right, yes. So they report, they're accountable to the leader and to the entire group, and quite frankly, the leader and the group too are accountable to the teams, because if they have a problem or they get stuck in some way, you want to know, and you want to help. You want to help them get moving in a forward direction so they don't come back 4 weeks later and tell you that 2 days in they kind of hit a roadblock and wandered off. No. They are accountable to reporting into you, the leader, possibly more often than to the group itself, depending on how you set it up and what needs to be done. Yes. So, creation of teams. Good point, Hussein and Lila. Let's go on to the next one, or we will run out of time, which we often do. We often don't get to the recipes. And I apologize if that happens again, but we have such nice conversations. The next one is enforcing civility rules, right? For those of you who are new, thank you for coming. For those of you who have listened before, thank you for being here. The civility rules are very simple. Recipe for Peace Now has only one rule, and that is we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. We're going to treat each other in a civil manner, a civil and really professional manner. Yes? Yes. In order to prevent your group from violating the civility rules, you must announce them, because it's not fair to have rules that nobody knows about. Mm-hmm. Enforce them immediately, not let things get out of hand and go, oh, I remember, I have civility rules that are supposed to apply to this. By the time things have gotten out of hand and you have allowed it, it's kind of late. You want to enforce your civility rules immediately, consistently, even though it's sometimes repetitive. Consistently and fairly, right? Yeah, because otherwise people will feel picked on, even if they are violating the civility rules and they think it's funny. If somebody else gets away with it, they will be mad. Yes, yes. So immediately, consistently, that means every time, and fairly. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know sometimes you will feel like a kindergarten teacher with a bunch of really unruly children. But that's all right. We'll get to our successful outcome. And as I often tell my participants who are feeling kind of surly towards one another, you know, the faster we get this done, the faster we'll get rid of each other and never have to see each other again. So let's get to our successful outcome and leave. Yeah, it's always a surprise to them. I don't know why. Here we go. Civility rules. Enforce them immediately, consistently, and fairly. Ah, Suki is indeed making a very good point. She says that I've forgotten to tell everyone that the leader, that would be us, are role models. We're the role models for civility. We cannot enforce something that we do not follow. We must never lose our temper, interrupt, do any of those bad things, bully, that violate the civility rules. We cannot ask people to follow rules that we ourselves do not follow. Yes. Tam and others are talking about if somebody refuses to follow the civility rules, they're just really, really obnoxious. You can remove them from the group if you can. Sometimes you can't remove them from the group because they are integral to the final outcome in some way. I see that corporate a lot. The problem is that they know it, so they're just being bullying and trying to violate the civility rules. I have a variety of ways to solve that, most of them being peer pressure and embarrassment. Also, if you're in the corporate arena especially, business arena, usually this person has someone over them who you can, well, you can inform of the problem, right? And kind of make it clear to them that if they'd like to keep their really probably very nice job, perhaps they should follow some civility rules. And if they don't want to be there, perhaps we can negotiate an alternate, someone else. Yeah. Because sometimes people are being uncivil because they would like to be thrown off. They really don't want to be here. That's fine. Let's try to get an alternate. Let's find somebody else. You don't have to disrupt the place. I got the picture. Yes. Padmea says the civility rules are basically taking turns and no bullying. You know, that's about it. Taking turns with speaking and everything else and no being a bully. Yeah. Yes. Let's take on our next one. That's the leader leading towards the successful outcome. You know how sometimes people say something interesting that's not exactly off topic? I mean, it's not way out there. It's not just some sort of a, I don't know, completely not talking about topic. It's kind of an aside to what we're doing. And it's interesting. And we all go, wow, kind of off center. It's not really going to lead us towards our successful outcome. It's just kind of a curiosity, right? Excuse me, took a sip of water. And it's not being uncivil, really, but it is being kind of a distraction. Sometimes that's deliberate. Deliberate is in violation of the civility rules. We'll have a little conversation about that. But sometimes it's just that people have brains that kind of flutter. And they find something out in their research that they want to impart really badly and talk about lots. But it's kind of off topic, off path. Yeah. So when you lead your group towards a successful outcome and you're accountable for leading them like that, it's you get people on track. You lead back from the interesting but irrelevant to the outcome conversation. I actually come right out and say it. I say, you know, that's fabulous. And let's all think on that in our spare time. And it's a really good thing to hold in the back of our heads. But at the moment, since time is limited, let's get back to discussing the issues at hand and what to do so that we all leave with a clear idea of next steps. Yeah, nobody disagrees with that, including the person that brought the interesting tidbit to light. Let's all think about it later and let's to what we're doing, right? Yeah. Because it is kind of irrelevant to the outcome, but you don't say that because that's rude. You say it's really interesting, but we need to, our time is limited, and we need to know what our next steps are right for these issues. And then we may get back to it. It's just something to think about. Yeah. Because oftentimes it is very interesting, but, you know, time is limited and we need to go leave this room knowing what our next step is and what our assignments are, right? Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Erica says you need to go step by step, but always going forward. That's kind of my motto, yeah. I do, I mean, you can look back to see where you've been to show how much success you've had. I think that has real good validity because it's affirming. Mm-hmm. But we want to keep pushing forward towards the successful outcome. Because if we just kind of get real comfortable, we're not going to get to the final round, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So step by step, always going forward. Mm-hmm. It's a good point Cheryl and others are making that you may need to reevaluate the details of a successful outcome. Yeah. Yes, Leon says, too broad or too ambitious, you need groundwork to achieve your ultimate goal. Too broad or too ambitious, you need groundwork to achieve your ultimate goal. I like it. Because that's true. Sometimes you get a goal and it's kind of big. And when you go to think about it really, you think, you know, let's start the next steps. Let's start working towards it. But we know that this is kind of broad. Let's narrow it down. What are we doing? What's our goal for whatever reasonable time period it is, 2 months? What's our goal to do as a practical matter, right? Yeah. Because, you know, you could talk about world peace, and it's a nice goal, but let's do something a little bit more pragmatic that's a step towards that, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So you may indeed need to reevaluate the details of a successful outcome, as Cheryl says. And, you know, one of the things I always say, and one of the things we are accountable between leader and participant and whoever brought in the leader, is that we need to define what a successful outcome looks like. And you'd be surprised when we go around the table after having that as an assignment and we think about it for a minute and go around the table. We oftentimes have very divergent views. What does a success? We want to know. How will we know when we have reached our successful outcome if we're not quite certain what it is? Yeah, how are we going to know that? So, pardon me. We do indeed need to define what success looks like as a group. We need to know where we're headed. We have to define it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm not adverse to this. Bayer and a lot of other folk, a lot of you are voting to have leading towards a successful outcome accountability, to actually create a timeline where you check off, this is how far you've come. It can be a fairly fluid timeline, unless, of course, you've got actual drop-dead dates, like must be on the ballot by fill in the blank. But a timeline like that, yes. I think a timeline is useful if it's a visual aid to show where we started and how far we've come. I do. I think a timeline should be made just because you check off a box that says make a timeline, because it is somewhat time-consuming, right? Yeah. And it needs to be fluid, unless, of course, there's the drop-dead date where you must have something in because an outside entity requires it. Taxes. I don't know what, but a lot of times there's a reason for an actual deadline and a timeline, and you don't want to blow it. Yeah, because you're accountable to not do that too. Yeah, so a timeline's good as a visual aid to show that we have come a long way. Mm-hmm. The next one's our accountability for a smooth process. It goes both ways. The participants need to be accountable for their own behavior, their own civility, right? They need to be accountable for following the civility rules. Mohammed says that to remember that it's the participants' first time and you need to explain frequently, even if it's our 50th. You know, that is a very good point Mohammed is making, that you need to remember that it's their first time, your participants' first time, and you need to explain everything frequently, even though it's your 50th time. But remember, they're seeing it for the first time. They don't know what's happening and what's going on. You need to explain it. That is to really do with transparency. And I'm very big on explaining things and very open and good about answering questions. And if the questions are all coming from one person and they're kind of in the catch-up phase, right, catching up, we can answer those questions more semi-privately during one of the breaks where we have the food and like that. But no question is stupid. Some questions keep us kind of bogged down if there's too many of them, and they should be answered in a more personal manner. Accountability for the process. Allison says we need to keep track of progress within the teams. They need to keep checking in. I am all in favor of that. I like to check in. Sometimes I'll even call the leaders if I haven't heard from them in a little while. I like to see how it's going so we don't get a nasty surprise. I like to see that we're all on track and we haven't somehow veered off accidentally. That happens. I like to see that we are really, really working on it, really doing our assignment, yes? And that the teams are working. The teams are a good thing. So you keep track of, you do keep track of people. It's easy to do nowadays if it's just a clerical type keeping track with one of those freebie software apps where you could sign in and tell people how you're doing. I like to check in by phone or Skype or whatever, more in person, by voice, so to speak, because I like to really hear how it's going. Right? Yeah. And kind of take a look at them and see how we're getting along over there before they report in something kind of not useful. Edward and others say you need to be open to questions and clarifications. Yes, and you also need to give people resources so that they can find stuff out without particularly asking you if they don't want to. Yeah, resources for research and for getting the answers. That's part of the team effort, right? Right. Yep. Open to questions and clarifications. Yeah. And also, you should be open to the fact as leader and accountable to your participants as they are to you that sometimes somebody needs help. And that's why they're asking all the questions, because they said no problem and nodded their head. And they might even be allegedly an expert in something, but it's pretty darn obvious that they're not, right? That it's just not working. They don't have the expertise. They don't have the knowledge that we all thought they did. You're going to need to call in somebody else, not fire that team member, but we're going to need to have an expert. We're going to need to get somebody to help, right? Because every team is an integral part of the whole, and one of them can't kind of not make it, right? Good point that a lot of people are making. Sometimes you need to have something, you need a translator, literally a person who can translate, well, in my case, from anything into English. Sometimes people think that they speak the language, especially in the United States, because their family did. But when it gets down to it and it's something fairly long or technical, they don't really speak that much of their former native tongue anymore, if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's kind of like, well, that's, no, we're going to need to call in an expert. The next one about accountabilities. is accountability to others, not just the participants, not just the other leaders, right? Yeah, we often talk about this. Jackson's calling them invisible participants already. Sometimes in a negotiation, any kind of a dispute resolution, really, there are people there that aren't in the room. They're standing behind the actual participants who are reporting to them, or in maybe even not so formally, but they want the invisible person's approval, right? But they're not in the room and they're not participating. It's like your participant is their agent and trying to do the best they can and reporting back. That might literally be true. Oftentimes it is not. It is just a generic type agency, right? A generic type, I need to report back to this person because they like to know what's going on, or they're my leader outside of this group, and they impact my life, and I'm trying to please them. Mm-hmm. So they're invisible participants in the room who are reporting back, as Jackson says. Mm-hmm. What do you do about it? Anne and others are saying you reach out to the opposition and also allies to pool, P-O-O-L, resources to get everything together. The theory being that there is power in numbers, too. And also, you don't waste money like that. It's one of the things that I always think Rotary should do when they go to all kinds of countries. Well, look at all the people on the ground already. We should have solved this by now, for heaven's sakes. Tell me what you're doing and we won't duplicate it, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. What should we do? Let's invite them in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's invite them in. In fact, oftentimes, and this is another point that's being brought up, the leader has an invisible friend, has somebody that they're reporting to. Well, that's important too. It's somebody that we have to say, well, this is how it's going. Mm-hmm. Somebody who actually kind of would like you to make it go a certain way because it would be advantageous to them, right? Yeah. Visible people in the room. I like to invite them in. I do. I like them to engage. First of all, I like to know who I'm dealing with. Second of all, I'd like to know what it is that their opinion is and what it is that they want and how we can reach middle ground, right? We can probably reach consensus if you're interested in this topic. Mm-hmm. Yes. Ah, Charles and others are saying to use the 5W questions, right? Yeah. Especially when somebody's got somebody else they're reporting to. And also especially when you find this someone else and invite them in, right? Right, yeah. Use the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Why do we use these? Because we want to find out what on earth is happening, right? Right, yes. And I use them all the time with my other, right? The person that brought me in. Before I even take it on, I ask the 5W questions. And then I want to know how long the group has been trying, because that kind of makes a difference too. Because there's kind of, when you walk into some group that's been trying and trying and trying, there's a group dynamic of failure, because that's been their experience. And I actually tell them, and I actually believe this to be true, that failure is more instructive oftentimes than success. Yes, because you can learn from it. You can grow and you can learn what not to do. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, so we're going to bring in the invisible people. If they can't be brought in, they should be at least updated in an impartial manner. Mm-hmm. But let's ask the 5W questions. Let's take a real interest. let's explain right up front, which is something that I do, that they're not going to lose their influence and power. We're not trying to grab anything. We're just trying to make the world a better place. You'd be surprised that many people do indeed endorse this. They are not amenable. It's just that people, the other side has assumed that they are because of their dress, their culture, their religion. Name six things, right? Right. 5W questions. Now let's talk about, we've talked about the leader. Now let's talk about the participants. What about participant accountability? What are they accountable for, right? Yeah. This is a good point. Yoshi and others are saying that they're accountable for full participation to the best of their ability. Can't ask for more than that. Yoshi says they're responsible, they're accountable for full participation to the best of their ability. Yes, they are. Everyone's accountable for that. Leader, participant, everyone. Your best shot, your best try. And if we combine all of our best, we're going to make it. Fred and others are saying that participants are accountable to admit when they need help and need to call in an expert. You're accountable for how much you can do and for telling someone how much you can do, for heaven's sakes. Admit when you need help, call in an expert. Yeah, Sharon and others saying that participants are accountable to ask questions and stay on track. I get lots of questions when I do an alternative dispute resolution. I welcome them all, not personal ones, but you know what I mean, business ones, because it means people want to know. And if somebody asks a question about the process, about what we're doing, about an assignment, about an interpretation maybe even, if they asked it, there's a good chance that there were three other people in the room who wanted to know too, but they were just too shy to ask, or they didn't want to seem weak, like they didn't know something. Have that a lot, especially in the corporate world. Yes. So I answer all questions, and I very much welcome them. So they are responsible for their own participation, for the full participation. They're accountable to ask if they need an expert. Accountable to ask questions and stay on track. I like this one, too. The participants, the participants are accountable to act in good faith. Good faith. I'm giving it my very best shot. I'm acting in good faith. You know, it's a good point that Helen is making, too. The participants, and quite frankly, the leader, are accountable for actions towards others, for upholding their part in the group dynamic. Responsible for their actions towards others and for upholding their part in the group dynamic. Yes, you're part of a team, part of a group. Let's act like it. Let's be accountable. Let's be civil. Let's get this done so that it's done and we've reached our successful yes. My friends, let's get to one recipe because I know a lot of you like them, and last week I didn't get to any of them. I don't know which one's been hanging around longer. Let's do the pork and pasta casserole. These recipes kind of go from week to week. A lot of times we don't have time, but this time I made a special effort. We've got like 8 minutes. We should be able to make this. So if you're going to have food, and you are, because the food is a tool. It is not because we are hungry. It might be dinner time, but that's not the reason. The food is a tool to keep us talking to each other, to talk about something that's not going to anger anyone, right? Right. Everybody loves to eat, and it gives you something to talk about. How'd you make that? What is it? How'd you learn how to do it? Wow, it's delicious. Yeah. If you're going to have food, you're going to take a survey. You're going to take a survey of your participants as to if they have any food prohibitions. religious prohibitions to some sort of food, allergies, and like that. You want everyone to have a very good time. Mm-hmm. You're also going to ask people when they come with the food to come with a list. Not what it is, meatloaf, but what is in it so that we all can see that we want, that we can eat it. I can run my eye down the list and go, yeah, I think I can eat that. Also, I think that we should have some safe recipes. Those are those that everybody can eat for sure, and they're unlikely to cause problems. And then after you've taken your survey and you know what your people can and cannot eat, mostly cannot, we could have an adventure recipe. Mm-hmm. Because we've taken our survey and everybody can eat it as far as we can determine, but we are going to label it just in case. And our adventure recipe today is a pork and pasta bake. Oh, so delicious. Mm-mm-mm. So, we're going to, and it's easy to do too. And also, you can bring it and kind of warm it in the oven, and it will smell, if you have an oven in your facility, smell fabulous. So, let's have 2 tablespoons of olive oil, nice big sweet onion. I like those Vidalias chopped up. 2 garlic cloves, also chopped. If you think I use too much garlic, you can use less. 3 carrots, diced. Let's have about 4 ounces of pancetta, which is that lovely pork, the cured pork that we're going to chop up. Yeah, we don't need too much of it. It's going to kind of permeate. Besides, it's very expensive. 1 pound of nice ground pork. You can use chuck also. Use something that will make a nice, tasty meal and is, yeah, you can make this kind of non-adventurous, well, I'm still going to have wine, non-adventurous by using ground meat and chicken stock. But it's better with the pork. Okay, we're going to have a pound and a half of ground pork, about 1/2 cup of white wine. Don't cook with anything you wouldn't possibly eat drink, although it sure doesn't have to be expensive. Let's have 1/4 cup of tomato puree. Let's have a nice can of diced tomatoes. Mm-hmm. A couple tablespoons of chopped sage. We're going to have the pasta, of course. It's going to have a whole pound of pasta that we're going to cook al dente and set aside, right. I personally recommend some sort of a individual pasta that's easy to serve and not a long stringy one. Personally, I like rotini. I think it looks pretty. But something like that that can be served with a spoon and doesn't need tongs, it's the messy factor that gets to me. Mm-hmm. Let's have about 6 ounces of mozzarella cheese. I'm going to dice it up. And 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I'm going to use a jar of Alfredo sauce, of white sauce. If you make your own Alfredo, you're a finer person than I am, and I'm sure it'll be fabulous. But it's easy, it's cheap, and it's good. It's like spaghetti sauce. Around here, it comes white in a jar. It's Alfredo sauce. Most places is such a thing. Yes. We're all going, yeah, we got that. Okay. It's just easier to do. If I'm going to use the jar, look up a simple recipe for Alfredo if you're not. So let's preheat our oven to 400. We're going to take that oil and heat it in a big skillet. Going to add the onion and the garlic and the carrots. Ooh, 5 minutes. The onion is softened. Now we're going to add the ham, the pancetta. Cook for another 5 minutes. You can indeed use diced up ham if you want to. It's kind of a good recipe for leftovers, but I don't like to say it because I don't like you to use leftovers and make anyone sick. So we're going to add the pork. And if we're using the regular ground pork, we're going to cook it and breaking it up with a wooden spoon, right, browned all over. We're going to stir in the wine, the tomato puree, the diced tomatoes, and the chopped sage. Go easy on this. I'm going to say, basically speaking, don't use the juice of the diced tomatoes. You're not going to need that much liquid, and it's going to water down the Alfredo sauce. So kind of drain the diced tomatoes. Do not just plop the whole can in. Take the juice off, the wetness. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Where was I? The whole thing's in the pot now. You've got some liquid. You've got some wine. You've got the diced tomatoes and like that. Let's bring it to the boil. Then turn it down to really low heat and cover it and simmer it so that everything gets nicely incorporated. I'm afraid that I uncover and peek in the middle and see if it needs a little liquid. If it does, you can add a little, you can add a little more wine if you want, or some of the diced tomato juice. Stir it around, cover, simmer, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. You've got now a wonderful pork mixture. Take that and stick it in a nice big casserole dish. Stir in the mozzarella. Let's put in half. Well, okay, you've got the pork in there, right? What we're going to do is we're going to take that Alfredo sauce and we're going to stir in the mozzarella and half of the Parmesan into the sauce because otherwise it won't mix properly. But we're making the sauce more cheesy is what we're doing. We're going to put the rest of the Parmesan on the top in case you want to know what I'm going to do with it. In fact, you could put a little mozzarella on top too if you want it. Great. We drained the pasta really good, right? We're going to take the Alfredo sauce and with the cheese in it now, and we're going to put it and mix it in with the pasta instead of just mixing it in with the damp meat on the bottom because it'll make the pasta make like a fabulous crust. You've got the Alfredo sauce, the cheese mixed in with the pasta, right, which you've drained very carefully. We're going to now take that pasta, Alfredo, and cheese mixture, and we're going to pour it evenly over our pork mixture, which is in the bottom of the pan, right. You know the remaining Parmesan, let's sprinkle it on top just because it'll make it lovely. Stick it in your preheated oven. Takes about 30 minutes, not more because everything's really cooked. What you're looking for is a golden brown top. Oh my God, it's so delicious. And you have made kind of a pasta topping with the cheese and the Alfredo on top of the pork. With the sweet onions and everything. Oh, yummy. Everyone likes it. It's easy to serve. It is an adventure recipe because of the pork and also because of the wine. You can, of course, make this into a safe recipe by using, for example, chicken, which you will, of course, brown on all sides and to be very, very cautious with. I personally, yes, people are asking already. I personally don't think much of the ground turkey meat around here. It's kind of funny in consistency. Maybe it's just because it's like a brand name and you don't really get it from the butcher, right? I'm going to say no. But you could use meat. You could use ground meat, which would be less. Pork is a lot of people don't eat. Meat, more so, people eat. And if you want to make it vegetarian, you could certainly do that too, add lots and lots of vegetables. But and also, if you're going to do the safe recipe, you want to take out the wine, which you could substitute chicken stock fairly easily. Yeah, you could substitute beef stock too, but quite frankly, it makes it kind of dark, which is an aesthetic thing. So that is our adventure recipe because it has pork and wine. It could be modified any way you want. Extremely delicious. Can kind of warm in the kitchen, not too long really because it'll dry out, but while you're having your meeting, will smell fabulous, easy to portion out, and everybody likes it. Be sure and label if you're going to use the pork one. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for all of your participation. Thank you for being here, and thank you for listening. Yes, if you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.